जायाराधा माधवा कुंजा बिहारी गोपीशन वाला बागिनी बारदारी
tutti. Prensi kohosi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrindati Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinacha Makunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhanti Ganga Maiki Jamuna Maiki Tulasi Devi Maharani Ki Gaura Premanandi. All glories to the Assembled Devotees, all glories to the Assembled Devotees. All glories to Assemble Devotees, all glories to Lotus Feet of Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 1, text number 27. Kachi Kuranam Paramaha Shurano no. Kachi Kurunam Paramasurano Suno Brahma Sa Aste Sukam Angasarihi Brahma Sa Aste Sukam Angasarihi Jo vai swasnam privat dadati varam balanyo varatarpanina kachi kurnam paramasurno bamahasa aste sukam angasarihi Jo vai swasnam privat dadati varam balanyo varatarpanina kachit kuranam paramasurino Sukam anga sauri Jabai sasnam pribat dadati Varam badanyo varatarpanena Translation, Kachi, weather, Kurunam, of the Kurus, Parama, greatest, Sukriti, well-wisher, Na, our, Bamaha, brother-in-law, Saha, he, Aste, is Sukam, happy, Anga, O Udava, Saurihi, Vasudev, Yaha, one, two. Vai.
Vai.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Swasnam.
Swasnam.
Of the sisters.
Of the sisters.
Pitrivat.
Pitrivat.
Like a father.
Like a father.
Dadati.
Dadati.
Gifts.
Gifts.
Varam.
Varam.
Everything desirable.
Everything desirable.
Vadanyaha.
Vadanyaha.
Munificent. Vara,
Vara,
wife, Karpanina,
Karpanina,
by pleasing. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Please tell me whether the best friend of the Kurus, our brother-in-law Vasudev, is doing well. He is very munificent. He's like a father to his sisters, and he's always pleasing to his wives. So repeat after me. Please tell me.
Please tell me.
Whether the best friend of the Kurus.
Whether the best friend of the Kurus.
Our brother-in-law Vasudev.
Our brother-in-law Vasudev.
Is doing well.
Is doing well.
He is very munificent.
He is very munificent.
He is like a father to his sisters.
He is like a father to his sisters.
And he is always pleasing to his wives.
And he is always pleasing to his wives.
Okay. Put forward by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Lord Krishna's father, Vasudev, had 16 wives, and one of them named Pauravi, or Rohini, the mother of Baladev, was the sister of Vidura. Vasudev, therefore, was the husband of Vidura's sister, and thus they were brothers-in-law. Vasudeva's sister, Kunti, was the wife of Pandu, Vidura's elder brother. And in that sense also, Vasudev was brother-in-law to Vidura. Kunti was younger than Vasudev, and it was the duty of the elder brother to treat younger sisters as daughters. Whenever anything was needed by Kunti, it was munificently delivered by Vasudev due to his great love for his younger sister. Vasudev never dissatisfied his wives, and at the same time he supplied the objects desired by his sister. He had a special attention for Kunti because she became a widow at an early age. While inquiring about Vasudev's welfare, Vidura remembered all about him and the family relationship. Translation again. Please tell me whether the best friend of the Kurus, our brother-in-law Vasudev, is doing well. He's very munificent. He's like a father to his sisters, and he's always pleasing to his wives. Om magyana temerandasya gyananjana chalakaya chakshurum mitam dinatayismai sri gurave namaha. I offer my humble and respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, who has forced to open my eyes with torch-like knowledge. I offer my humble, respectful obeisances unto Him. Well, this is a very interesting chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, very dear to me, actually, because it has all these characters and stories that are related to the Mahabharata. And the Mahabharata, I've always been in love with the Mahabharata since I was in middle school, because in Spain where I was born and grew up, the Mahabharata and the Ramayana were the stories from the world literature that you were supposed to study. So when I was in 7th and 8th grade, I used to study the Mahabharata. But I didn't really quite understand what was going on, but I was fascinated by it. And then later on, when I was in college in Berkeley, I was not a devotee yet, but a friend said, you know, I found this book, you should read it. It was the Mahabharata by Subramanian. I said, well, okay, let me take a look. I said, oh yes, the Mahabharata. Of course, I studied this when I was in middle school. So I read it. When I read the Mahabharata, I couldn't really understand everything, but more or less I could make up. I mean, I was just, I was not, I mean, only if you really are given the mercy by a devotee that you can really actually understand some of the meaning of this text. But I knew that there was something fascinating there. It was so fascinating that I said, wow, this is fantastic literature. This is beautiful poetry. And at the time in Berkeley, I was studying flute, but at the same time I was a poet. I used to recite poetry in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay. And I used to write poetry and recite poetry. But then when I read the Mahabharata, I said, this is fantastic. I should stop writing poetry because I will never be able to write poetry like this. This is just beyond my imagination. This is incredible. So I was really fascinated by the Mahabharata. Of course, later on, I met the devotees and I found out other things concerning the Mahabharata and the stories, which are not just stories or mythology, but actually this is the real thing of the reality of what it is, of what exists. The reality of what it is that we live in a multi-dimensional universe with different dimensions. This may be a four-dimensional universe of three dimensions plus time, which is four-dimensional, and it is, so to speak, created and engineered by Lord Brahma with four heads. But there are other universes as well, which are coexisting here, that may have more than four dimensions, as we know from the story that Sariputta tells in Vedic cosmology and astronomy, that, you know, our four-headed Brahma wanted to see Krishna, and Krishna says, well, you know, he was introduced, oh, the Brahma is here. He said, which Brahma is this? He says, this is the four-headed Brahma of the material world. And Brahma got taken back and said, what do you mean, which Brahma? I am Brahma. I am the only Brahma. And Krishna said, no, there are other Brahmas. So Krishna gave the eyes and the ears to Lord Brahma, our Lord Brahma with the four heads, to see all the other Brahmas that Lord Krishna summoned to his presence. And some had 10 heads, some 100 heads. They had different dimensions according, different heads according to the dimensions that they were in charge of. And when they touched the floor with their helmets, a tumultuous sound occurred. Now, only our four-headed Brahma had been given the eyes and ears to see that. The other Brahmas didn't know that the other Brahmas were present there. So the other day, we were watching this interesting movie on Netflix concerning the JW telescope, where the materialists had to spend $10 billion to build this telescope that they sent 1 million miles away to find the beginning of the universe and take photographs. And they were successful, by God's mercy. And they took photographs of the beginning of the universe 13.8 billion miles away. Amazing, astounding. But that's all they could take pictures of. They couldn't see what is behind that first star that they took a photo of. Actually, it is very clearly 13.8 billion years ago, at the beginning of the day of Lord Brahma. The stars came from the body of Vishnu. But they cannot photograph Lord Vishnu. They cannot see Lord Vishnu. Why? Because Lord Vishnu would have to give them the eyes to see Vishnu. You cannot just go and say, oh, let me see Vishnu. No, no. Krishna has to give you the eyes. In the same way, you don't have to pass from this material body to see the spiritual world. You just have to be given the eyes to see the spiritual world now. Now, not when you pass, not when you leave this body. I know that some of the devotees right now in our community are passing because of old age or whatever situation. But it is not that you have to pass in order to go to Goloka Vrindavan. That's why I'm here. That's why I became a devotee myself. It's because when I read, especially if you read Krishna book, chapters 21 through 26, the description of autumn and beyond, the rasa dance, but especially the description of autumn, you will see that these are windows to the spiritual world. That's what Srila Prabhupada called it. That's what it is. It's a window to the spiritual world. It's not mythology. It's not a friction of our imagination or Srila Prabhupada's imagination or the Vedic imagination or Vedic sages created this or imagined this. No. They are actual glimpses to the spiritual world. How can we appreciate that? How? Because Srila Prabhupada gave it to us. Amazing. I heard recently someone that said, well, the Krishna book is just stories. They are just descriptions, very simple descriptions of Krishna's pastimes. I said, simple? Simple? This is actually the pastimes of Krishna. You can see them. It doesn't, you know, if you surrender to it, if you just put your mind into it, you will see that these pastimes, they're actually Krishna's pastimes, and they have been given to us. I mean, I don't know why, because I don't have any real merits to receive this knowledge or information, but I was. I have experienced things that are beyond my own conceptions. So, they are part of these literatures and information that has been given to us about the spiritual world. They are actually in the Mahabharata, including, the, of course, the famous text, the Bhagavad Gita. Now, the Mahabharata, I was part of a project organized by the original Vaikuntha players, and then became the Theater of Understanding with Lokamangala Prabhu and Sankirtan Das, and they took it to New York City. We presented the Mahabharata at the American Theater Actors, ATA, on the East Side, New York East Side, 51st Avenue, very expensive theater. We had to go and collect around Lakshmi doing street theater for a while in order to, we didn't know how we were going to pay for this theater because it was very expensive. It was downtown East Side, New York City. So we first went and collect Sankirtan doing street theater. Lokamangala was very, very expert on Sankirtan, so he trained me up on how to do Sankirtan and street theater. So in the beginning, we collected for it, but it so happened that we opened the play, the Mahabharata. It was with two actors, and they changed costumes. The original script actually was written, part of it, I guess part of it was by Nanda Kishore, who probably some of you have been going to see because he's now not feeling very well. So Nanda Kishore, in part, wrote part of the script, and then Lokamangala Prabhu and Sankirtan Prabhu, they adapted it, and they kind of collaborated together because we're part of the Vaikuntha players, and they were doing plays in New York City. So they together kind of came up with this script. But Nanda Kishore was a very important part of the script writing team. But then later on, Sankirtan and Lokamangala Prabhu, they took the Mahabharata and they adapted it for two actors, and they changed their character by changing costumes or mustaches or wigs. And one of my favorite characters was actually Vidura, which was played by Sankirtan. It was a very, very interesting part of my life, so to speak. We did it for about 10 years. We performed not only in New York City, but other parts. And one of the main reasons for the success was on the first night of our performance back in 1987, Walter Goodman from the New York Times, a reviewer from the New York Times, came and reviewed the play under the title A More Modest Mahabharata, because in Brooklyn, Peter Brooks, the famous Peter Brooks from London, England, was putting together his Mahabharata for 3 days, 9 hours, 90 actors and musicians. And we had a very, you know, just two actors, one musician, myself, on the stage playing all the music, and Devadeva Jagatpate, who was a dancer, who was doing some of the Bharatanatyam dance to accompany part of the Bhagavad Gita scene. That was it. A very simple crew. A more modest Mahabharata, very effective. In 1.5 hours, we told the heart of the Mahabharata. And of course, Vidura was a very important part of it. I don't know if we will have time to tell some of the stories, maybe some other time from the play. It was very, very well done. But anyway, the play was very successful after the review, and we sold out. Actually, we sold out every night for 5 weeks. So we were able, thank God, to be able to, because to go on Sankirtan and at the same time perform the play, it was kind of intense. So anyway, we could focus more on the playing of the theater piece. And it was very, very successful. So now let's go into some of the characters, because I wanted to talk about the genealogy that is being spoken here in this verse. Whether the best friend of the Kurus are brother-in-law Vasudev. Now, Vasudev, as we all know, is Lord Krishna's father, right? Vasudev and Devaki. So Vasudev was the father of Krishna. And then Vasudev has 16 wives. Rohini, or Pauravi, was one of the wives. The other, and then his sister, one of, well, what's the name? Not the, one of the daughters of, no, the sister of Vasudev was Prita. And Prita was given to King Kuntivaj. And Queen Kuntivaj raised Prita, who became Kunti. So Queen Kunti is actually the sister of Vasudev, and became, of course, Lord Krishna's aunt. So Arjuna and Krishna were cousins. It's a little bit confusing, the genealogy, but think of it from that point of view. So now, Kunti married Pandu. And Pandu was the brother of Vidura. That's why it is referred to here as, in the purport, that Vidura and Kunti were actually, Kunti was the sister of Vidura, because Vidura had a brother named Pandu. So let's go back a little bit on the genealogy of the Mahabharata. This is very interesting stories. I guess we would have to start with Queen Satyavati. Now, Queen Satyavati, the mother queen, she was married to King Santanu. And originally, Queen Satyavati had a service which was to transfer the travelers from one side of the Ganges River to another. And that was her service. And one day King Santanu saw her, and immediately he became infatuated, fell in love with Satyavati, and wanted to marry her. So he found out who her father was. So he went to, King Santanu went to see the father of Satyavati, the fisherman, and asked for her hand. So the fisherman said, "You can marry my daughter, but her offsprings must be the future kings of the kingdom. So if you can promise that, then you can marry my daughter." And King Santanu lowered his head and said, I'm sorry, but I cannot agree to that. I'm going to have to leave and pass on this opportunity. So he went back to court because he had a son from a previous marriage. The name of his son was Debabrath. So he went to his palace, and he was very depressed all the time, and very upset. And so his son, who loved his father very much, said, "Father, father, why are you so upset? How come you're so depressed? How can I help you?" So the father told him he wanted to marry Satyavati, but couldn't give the kingdom to the heirs of Satyavati, because he had already promised the kingdom to him, to Debabrath. So Debabrath, who loved his father, wanted to change that. So he went to see the fisherman and said, "You must allow to marry my father, to marry your daughter Satyavati. And in exchange, I renounce the kingdom. I will never be the king. I'll give the kingdom to my brothers." And the fisherman, who was very intelligent, he said, "Well, I heard of all these intrigues in the palaces. Usually, if someone is the king regent, will end up either killing the other princes or send them into exile. So I will not give my daughter in marriage." And then Debabrath issued a terrible vow, and he said, "For as long as I live, I will not have any children. I will not marry or have any children." So when he issued that vow, flowers rained from the sky, and a name came to him named Bhishma. So that was how grandfather Bhishma came into play here, the name Bhishma. That was actually Debabrath. So Bhishma came back to the palace and told his mother and father, "Now you can get married." So they got married. So Santanu and Satyavati had two children, Chitrangada, and Vichitravirya. Now Chitrangada was a very, very powerful king, very powerful warrior. And he subdued all the other kings from all the nearby kingdoms. And he became the emperor. Now there was a Gandharva king who also had the same name, Chitrangada. And he didn't want another Chitrangada to be in charge or to be the most famous of all the Chitrangadas in the universe. So he came down to planet Earth and challenged Chitrangada to a fight. And the Gandharva king won and killed Chitrangada. So now the next king became Vichitravirya. So the mother queen was very kind of concerned that Vichitravirya needed queens or wives in order to continue the Kuru dynasty. So Bhishma went to a Swayambhara ceremony and kidnapped, basically, that's the style of the warriors, to go and kidnap three princesses, Ambika, Ambalika, and Amba. So he took them in his chariot and drove away in the presence of all the other warriors. But nobody could challenge Bhishma. He was just very strong and powerful warrior. So after a while, he stopped the chariot. And Amba said, "You have done wrong to me, because I was already promised to another prince. And I was to marry him, and I'm in love with him. You should allow me to go back to him." And Bhishma said, "Be it. You can go back to your beloved king." So when Amba went to see this prince, the prince said, "No, you have already been touched by another man, so I cannot take you back. So go to your kingdom, go somewhere else, but I cannot take care of you." And Amba realized that she couldn't go back to her kingdom. She couldn't go back to Bhishma. And now she didn't have the prince that she was going to marry, so she couldn't marry. So she went into the forest to perform austerities and decided that the cause of her unhappiness was Bhishma, and eventually she promised that she would kill Bhishma. And eventually she passed and took birth again in another body, and she became Shikhandi, part of the Mahabharata story. Later on, Bhishma Dev will be killed under the auspices of Shikhandi. But that's how it happened. So the other two queens went back with Bhishma to the palace, Ambika and Ambalika. And Vichitravirya was very happy. For 7 years, they had wonderful pastimes, but they didn't have any children. And one day, King Vichitravirya became very sick and passed, died. So Mother Queen Satyavati became very concerned that that would be the end of the Kuru dynasty. So he asked Bhishmadev, said, Bhishma, as you know, according to religious principles, a brother can have a child in the womb of the sister-in-law. So you should have a child with Ambika or Ambalika or both. But Bhishma said, no, I have already issued the vow that I will be of celibacy, and I cannot turn on my vow. Find some other way that you can find a descendant for the Kuru dynasty. So Satyavati went away, realizing that she couldn't convince Bhishmadev. And then she thought about what happened to her many years ago before she met Shantanu. And what happened was that she had another child when she was passing travelers from one side of the Ganges to another. She had been born with a terrible fish smell. And so nobody really wanted to approach her, although she was a very beautiful lady. Nobody wanted to be near her because of her bad smell. But one day, the great sage Parasara Muni came from the heavenly planets, jumped on the boat, and had a child with Satyavati right away. The child grew up right there in front of their eyes. That was Srila Vyasadeva. And Parasara Muni said, please me very much, so I'm going to give you two boons. One is that you will not lose your maidenhood, so you will still be a virgin. And second, I exchange your fish bad smell for scent from the flowers of the heavenly planet. So she became like radiant with those boons from Parasara Muni. And Srila Vyasadeva said, Mother, I am going to live as an ascetic in the Himalayas. But if you ever need me in the future, call me with your mind and I'll come and help you. So at this point in time, Satyavati was in a situation where she really needed help. So she called on Srila Vyasadeva to help her to give offspring for the Kuru dynasty. So she told Vyasadeva when he came that they needed children and that he should have intercourse with Ambika and Ambalika, or Ambika, start with Ambika. So Ambika was waiting in her chambers thinking that actually Bhishmadev was gonna come to have a child. And when she heard the knocking on her door, went to open the door, and instead of Bhishmadev, saw this personality that was very fearsome, because Srila Vyasadeva lived in the Himalayas. He never bathed or used soap or combed his hair or cut his nails. He had very sharp eyes, and he was actually a very fearsome looking character with long hair, matted long hair. He was very not a very pleasant sight. So Ambika became very much afraid of Srila Vyasadeva. And during the act of the intercourse, she closed her eyes. So after Vyasadeva finished, he said, "Well, your child will be strong, very, very, very powerful and healthy, but because you close your eyes at the moment of this inception, he will be born blind." And so, yes, several months later, Dhritarashtra was born, who was blind. But Queen Satyavati said, "Well, we cannot have a blind king. This is not going to go well. You need to have another child with Ambalika." So Vyasadeva came a second time. And Ambalika was warned by Ambika not to close her eyes, otherwise the same thing would happen. So Ambalika had her eyes open, but still was terrified of Srila Vyasadeva, and actually became pale, like white. And so Vyasadeva said, as he was leaving, "Your son will be very strong, very powerful, a great warrior, and a great king, but he will be pale. So his name will be Pandu. Pandu means pale, the pale one." So Queen Satyavati thought, "Oh no, the first child is blind and the second is pale, white, he can be the king, but we don't have enough children or progeny to maintain and sustain the Kuru dynasty." So he asked Vyasadeva one more time. And Vyasadeva said, "Okay, mother, this is the third time and the last one that I can do this for you. So I'll come back in a few months and I'll have another child with Ambika after the child is born." So after Dhritarashtra was born, Vyasadeva came, but Ambika was terrified to see Vyasadeva again. So she dressed her maid servant with her clothes, her jewelry, put all the perfumes on her, made it look like it was her. So when Vyasadeva came, knocked on the door, and the servant opened the door, she immediately offered her obeisances to Srila Vyasadeva. She was very humble and very respectful, and sat down. Srila Vyasadeva gave him food and drinks and took care of him. And he was very, very pleased with the maidservant and said, "You have pleased me very much. Your son will be very, very wise and will be the counselor to the king. And his name will be Vidura." And that's the story of Vidura. So Vidura was a very, very great personality, very wise. And of course, Vidura, we consider him in a sense, the uncle of the Pandavas. And also, he was the brother of Queen Kunti, because Kunti married his brother Pandu. So he's more like sister-in-law, sister. So they were brother and sister. And so they always had this very close relationship. And Kunti, of course, was the aunt of Lord Krishna. So, Vidura always had a wonderful, wonderful feeling towards his nephews, especially the Pandavas, and he always wanted the best for the Pandavas. So let me see what time we have here so we can conclude this. Yeah, we only have 5 minutes, but just to give you an idea of some of the things that we used to do at the Theater of Understanding, I'll just read a couple of scenes here, very short. This was us actually when I went to see Nanda Kishore, his wife Jana Basmi. Do you have that scene where Duryodhan says, "I hate them"? I said, "Yeah, I have it right here. I have it. I have the script." And she said, "We have been looking for that scene for years. Can you please read it to Nanda Kishore?" I said, "Yeah, sure. I'll read it for you." So they had been looking for this scene for a long time. And this is from the Mahabharata. It's a scene of Duryodhan and Shakuni. And then the next scene will be Vidura, Dhritarashtra, and Duryodhan and Shakuni. So Duryodhan was played by Sankirtan Prabhu and Shakuni was played by Lokamangala Das. So remember, I listened to this for 10 years and we played like 4 or 5 times every week. So I've listened, I'm trying to get some of the inflections of their voices. I'm not like Lokamangala and Sankirtan, these were great actors. I was just the musician on the stage. But anyway, this is what I heard from them. Duryodhan and Shakuni. Starts with Duryodhan. "By my sword, I hate them." "Who?" "Yudhisthira and his brothers. They must be favored by the gods. How many times have we tried to destroy them, and how many times have they emerged unscathed?" "Caution, Duryodhana. Wolves have ears." "Caution is my father's watchword, not mine. I cannot cover up my thoughts with a cloak of hypocrisy. I speak my mind, and I say that unless and until I see the Pandavas destroyed, I will never be happy." "Child, child, you have seen for yourself how powerful they have become." "Ah, yes, Uncle Shakuni, I have indeed. The monarchs of the earth submit themselves before them like tribute-paying merchants. Yudhisthira has just performed the great Rajasuya sacrifice, a ceremony of such wealth and splendor that kings and sages from all over the world, even the demigods from heaven, were present. How pleased they all were with King Yudhisthira's magnanimous, charitable spectacle. Now, wherever I go, wherever I turn, someone is singing his praises." "Oh, my child, but he is praiseworthy." "Praiseworthy? He has been proclaimed master of the whole world. Yudhisthira and his brothers, masters of the world. And his palace, you should have seen it, the like of which mortal eyes have not beheld. It was built by Maya Danava." "Ah, Maya Danava, the architect of the nether regions." "Yes, Uncle Shakuni, it was constructed in such a puzzling way that if you didn't know the tricks, you would sometimes take water to be land or land to be water, a masterpiece of illusion. And there was Yudhisthira seated amidst it all, like a god, surrounded by his brothers, attended by their queen, Draupadi. I entered that palace. It should have been mine, mine. I tried to pass through a doorway, or what I thought was a doorway, and smashed my head against a blank wall. They laughed at me. Then I saw what appeared to be water. I went closer and found that it was just the floor inlaid with slabs of marble. I tried to walk across it and fell in. It was water, a marble pond filled with very clear water. I was drenched. Everyone laughed. Krishna's queens were there and they laughed. Draupadi laughed. Huh? Draupadi laughed at you? Yes, uncle. Draupadi, more beautiful than any woman I have ever seen, whom I wanted to the core of my soul, Yudhishthir's queen laughed at me. Uncle Shakuni, you say you love me. If you really love me, help me. Think out a plan which will make me master of the world. As I have said, the Pandava brothers are very powerful. They can never be defeated if we fight them in a war. But I have a weapon more powerful than mere steel. I can make all their immense wealth yours. Not a drop of blood will be shed, nor will any blame be attached to you. No? Cast off this depression and listen to me. It does not become you. The Pandavas give up their wealth without fighting? What are you saying, Uncle Shakuni? Well, this great Yudhishthir has one terrible weakness: gambling. So? He loves gambling, but he does not know how to play. This will serve us. I will please you by using the bones of my dead father. What? These dice. They obey my every command. No one in this world can play against me and win. Invite Yudhishthir to a game. I will make him gamble his entire kingdom away. But you must tell your father. Get his permission. It will be like taking a toy from the hands of a babe. I can do it for you easily. Do you doubt me? No, Uncle Shakuni, no, but go on, my child, ask your father for his consent. No, Uncle Shakuni, you will be able to convince father more easily than I can. He's always afraid of what his brother Vidura will think. I should assure him of the safety of this plan. Shakuni, you are the only one who can convince him for me. All right, Duridan. I will do it. And then they leave. Okay, well, we're going to stop here, but there are other things that are very, very beautiful. And I think there was a movie that was made once of the Mahabharata. Maybe sometime you can listen to some of these beautiful stories told by them. So are there any questions? Any questions, Sasha Prabhu?
Thank you very much, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
My question is there a place where you artists have archived this material? Because we've already seen, you can count the names of them that you mentioned today, they've passed away. So with the passing of all pioneer actors, musicians, is it going to just disappear with you, or is there some plan to save it, make sure that it's kept?
I'm sorry if I understand the question. Is that if there is a database, you're saying, or
archives?
If there are any archives, probably Sankirtan Prabhu in New Vrindavan may have some of this information. And of course, he did write a book on the Mahabharata. He wrote his own Mahabharata. And he does, yeah. If you write to Sankirtan Prabhu, he probably has videos. We did make some videos. And there is also a recording of the Mahabharata, what we played. Actually, we played the Mahabharata all over the country, really. I mean, we came all the way to Miami. We perform in many yoga centers, including we perform for Sri Chinnoy at his ashram in Queens. And Sri Chinnoy, he was very impressed by the play. And he came on the stage and embraced us. He was so happy to hear the Mahabharata from us. And he knew it was based on the teachings of Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. He really knew that. He knew we were devotees, no question about it. And so he put his hands in his pocket and took about $800 in cash and gave it to us. Said, here, a donation from here. Here, they had already agreed to give us some money for the performance presentation at the ashram, but even so, he gave us $800 extra from his own pocket. He was very impressed by it. And then we performed also for Swami Rama at the Himalayan Institute. Actually, he liked it so much, we were scheduled to do it once during a big festival, and we did it for every night, for 3 nights. We performed the Mahabharata. He really liked it. So, these yogis and gurus that came from India, once they were encountered with the teachings of Swami Prabhupada, they had something in their hearts that really touched them. And although we may say that they are Mayavadis or impersonalists or this and that, but once they hear the philosophy properly expressed in the proper way, it opens their hearts. They were very impressed by this play that Lokamangala and Sankirtan Prabhu put together. So yeah, again, answering your question, Sankirtan Prabhu does have a lot of these recordings. I do have the script of the Mahabharata, and I do have the script of the Ramayana I found the other day in my house, yeah. But your best bet really is Sankirtan Prabhu. And of course, I'm just practicing telling these stories to you right now, because I hope pretty soon I'll be able to tell the stories to my grandkid that was just born 4 days ago. And I think pretty soon I'll be telling all these stories to all the children around.
Prabhu, I had a quick question. In regards to Dhritarashtra being born blind, it's also mentioned that he's born bereft of spiritual vision. Is that directly attached to the act of the queen closing her eyes? Or was it just that he was physically blind? Or because she closed her eyes, was he also spiritual?
Yes, both, yes. He was, and also, there is one scene in the Mahabharata where Vidura tells Dhritarashtra, my dear brother, you have been born blind from birth. And you also lack vision, spiritual vision. Now, Dhritarashtra was very, very powerful, and he's playing a role. Remember, this is all Lila, and this is Krishna's pastime on earth. You know, he came to perform this pastime. So it is all Lila. But Dhritarashtra was very, very powerful. But he was like he had 100 children. And with Gandhari, he married Gandhari. And Duryodhana was also blind. Now, as I said earlier, only by the mercy of a guru, the mercy of Krishna, you can see other dimensions, you can see the spiritual world. You do have to have that mercy. When Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, he shows the universal form to Arjuna, he says, but I give you divine eyes so you can see this universal form. Now that universal form, the same one, was shown to Duryodhana. But Duryodhana wouldn't accept it. Because Lord Krishna was trying to make peace with the Kurus. Said, no, Duryodhana, make peace with the Pandavas and you will be happy. But Duryodhana didn't want to hear that. And at the end, Krishna showed him his universal form, but Duryodhana didn't want to accept it, didn't want to see it. So, in other words, it requires mercy and also the willingness. It's just a special thing that to be able to see Krishna's glories and to see Krishna behind everything, it's like they will always come up with some other story, instead of giving the merit to God as a person. No, they'll come up with some other story. Yeah, the universe was created by a Big Bang. What Big Bang? The whole world is perfect, it's harmonious. It has to come from music. It has to come, it's musical. The music of the spheres. Krishna is playing on his flute. That's how he's giving the information to Lord Brahma in order to create the universe. It's not that it's some big bang. No, it's all coming from that perfect place of musical intuition that Krishna is breathing his music from his insight and giving it to us. But to be able to see that and to convince the scientists, that requires a very special personality. But Srila Prabhupada, that is his credit. Really his credit is that he brought the spiritual world to us. And you can see that spiritual world in his books right now. Right now. You don't have to die. If you die and you go to the spiritual world, you go to Goloka Vrindavan, you know why you would be going to Goloka Vrindavan? It's because you saw the spiritual world here right now in this lifetime. Not like you have to wait until you pass to see Goloka Vrindavan. No, you saw it now, so you'll go later, and you will go to Goloka Vrindavan later. That's all. And how do you do that? You got to have the mercy of the devotees. That's very important. The mercy of other people. I'll tell you a short story, because otherwise it's already past my time, I think. Yeah, it's past my time. But it's a very, very short story. That's when I first went to Berkeley Temple. And I had been going there for 3 or 4 days, but the first time I went to Berkeley Temple, near Jagannath Puri, I was so impressed by the temple. I was like, oh my God, this is another world. I thought literally I was in another universe. And I didn't know anything about anything. I just was very impressed by the decorations, the paintings. I was like in another world. And then the third day I went to the temple, there is a devotee that said, came to me and said, oh, is this your first time here? I said, no, I've been here, this is my third time. I've been coming every day because I really like your temple. He said, oh, and have you seen the deities on the altar? I said, what deities? He said, yeah, don't you see the deities right there? Lord Jagannath, Lady Subhadra, Lord Balaram. I said, no, I don't see anything. What are you talking about? He said, well, come closer. So I go to the altar. We were right at the edge of the altar, okay? And the devotee said, you don't see this figure with large eyes looking at you, straight at you? I said, no, I don't see anything like what you're talking about. He said, you don't see a yellow figure next to him and a white figure next on the other side? I said, no, I don't see it. What are you talking about? He said, no, this is Lord Jagannath. He said, Lord Jagannath? Jaga? What? Jaga? Jack? He said, yeah, Lord Jagannath is in front of you, looking at you. And like fog in the breeze, like mystic something, like mystic fog, like mystic clouds, they lifted from my eyes and I could see a figure in front of me. I said, oh, I see something. What is this? Where am I? Who is this person that is looking at me? I said, that's Lord Jagannath. I said, Lord Jagannath, wow. Oh my God. I was so shocked when I saw Lord Jagannath the first time. Jagannatha Swami Nayana Patagami Nayana Patagami Baba Tumi Jagannatha Swami Nayana Patagami Nayana Patagami Baba Tumi Baba Tumi Baba Tumi Baba Tumi. Be visible to my eyes. Not that I'm going to go and see Lord Jagannath. Well, maybe you are already a devotee, you can go and see that. But not just anybody can go and see Lord Jagannath. You may see sculptures, or maybe you can see something, but Lord Jagannath? Lord Jagannath, you got to have the mercy of the devotees, and then you got to have the mercy of Lord Jagannath to be able to see him. Not an easy thing. Anyway, I passed my time. Sorry. Thank you very much. Thank you for your attention. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Lord Jagannath ki jai.